This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, we're pleased to welcome to the program Matt Wentzel. Matt joins us, I believe, from Minnesota, where the Wild and the Penguins will do battle tomorrow night, tonight before the Penguins make their way to Winnipeg for the contest tomorrow evening. Matt, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Yeah, I saw that they get the snow that they were expecting in Minneapolis.
There's a little bit. There's a little bit on the ground right now and on some parked cars, but crazy, at least not yet.
Well, yeah, just then, mentally prepare yourself for what you're about to walk into tonight when you come into Winnipeg.
Yeah, Matt, about that, we apologize. I know that you're not going to be in Winnipeg until after the game, but we tried to hold off the snow for you. We apologize because right now it doesn't look too good out there in Winnipeg.
Well, I appreciate you trying. I brought a coat at least. It's not a very warm coat, but I have one nonetheless.
Yeah, that light fall coat you brought probably isn't going to do very much, but we appreciate the effort nonetheless. Matt obviously brought you on to talk about the Penguins. The Penguins and Jets meet for the second time in 5 days. This Penguins team right now just absolutely littered with injuries up and down the lineup. You know, obviously these games matter, you know, even injured or healthy, they matter just the same as they do. But, you know, is there a bit of an asterisk next to this Penguins start to the season simply because of the litany of injuries that they're experiencing right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the players and certainly not the coach would feel that way, or at least admit it. But I think there's definitely a sense of, like, we just need to kind of hang on here until we get everyone back. And, you know, to lose four guys from their top nine, you know, what, we're 9 days into the season, I'm sure it's not totally unheard of, but it's pretty rare and not ideal. So, you know, they're a team that wants to run and gun and score and win games 5-4, but they're essentially like Jake Guentzel, Sidney Crosby, and the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins right now up front. So they might have to tweak their game a little bit. That's what they did against the Ducks a couple nights ago and were able to squeak out a 2-1 win. But, yeah, it's certainly just kind of hanging on, trying to stay afloat right now. So once they do get healthy, they're still in the mix here.
You know, Matt, you mentioned Wilkes-Barre Scranton, and the team announced they recalled Joseph Blandisi, and I'm not sure if he's going to be in the lineup for the Penguins tonight or tomorrow versus the Jets, but when you consider that there are so many players already up with the Penguins who would otherwise be playing for Wilkes-Barre in the American Hockey League, I mean, if you're Jim Rutherford, what can you do right now? You mentioned that you're kind of just trying to, you know, wait it out and wait for Evgeny Malkin and Nick Bjugstad and Alex Galchenyuk to get into the lineup. But do you expect Jim Rutherford to make any major moves, or are you kind of hamstrung until, you know, you get these players back?
I still think he's been trying to make a move since July. I mean, when they signed Brandon Tanev, a move that put them like right up against the cap, and that was out without even them having something in place for Marcus Pedersen. You know, Rutherford said we're likely going to have to make a deal to make it all work, and it never happened. But I don't think it was for a lack of effort. I just don't think. I mean, two of the big anchors financially are on their blue line, and Zach Johnson and Eric Branson. And I think they would prefer to keep Gabranson for a few different reasons, but he doesn't quite, you know, Jack Johnson isn't, I don't really see anyone making a hockey trade for Jack Johnson, so to speak. And they probably had trouble finding someone to take on Eric Gabranson too. So, you know, ideally they have nine defensemen on the roster right now. They've been really pleasantly surprised with John Marino, who they got from the Oilers, who, you know, he was in the lineup the other night over Gabranson. He could be in the lineup again tonight and this weekend. They like him a lot. 22, a good puck mover. I mean, there's some rookie mistakes in there, but they like having a blue line who can skate and pass and get it away from the forecheck. And so, yeah, I think they will probably try to, you know, maybe move one of these defensemen, one to maybe get a little bit of forward help in the short term, but also just their cap situation isn't great now. And then when Brian Rust comes back or some of these other guys come back, they're going to need to resolve some things, and then next year too. So, you know, I think it's twofold, but certainly you would think that he'd be looking to move from his surplus to defenseman if he can find a taker for one of these guys and maybe find a forward who can help him get through this.
You know, Matt, Jets fans for 3 years watched Brandon Tanev run up the ice and hit everything that had an opposing team's jersey on it. What are Penguins fans thinking of the guy that Jim Rutherford signed for 6 years so far?
I think they like him. I mean, it's a few games. It's hard to tell what the fans think of a guy. It takes a little while for them to maybe appreciate some of the things that Brandon does. But I know that I've certainly been impressed. I mean, he really does come as advertised. I mean, he just is all over the place. He skates fast. He skates hard. And he draws penalties. I mean, he's already drawn 3 or 4 penalties. Sounded like a better idea when they had all the forwards on the, you know, Malkin and stuff on the power play where they can rule those guys out there, but they still have a pretty formidable group. But yeah, Tanev has just really done all those little things, and, you know, you see those plays where you're like, man, if this guy just had a little bit of hands and finishing ability, he would be a great player. But, you know, I think some thought that he might just drop down into a bottom six role. I thought that too. I mean, I thought he could be a guy that moved up and down the lineup, but they really pinpointed him as someone who could play with top players. I mean, we saw him a little bit with Sidney Crosby in camp, and then he started the season with Malkin and Galchenyuk. And, you know, he's a disruptive player, and he certainly creates opportunities for those guys just with his hustle and forechecking and hitting and all that stuff.
Matt Wenzel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matt covers the Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The Jets and the Penguins tomorrow evening here in Winnipeg. Of course, the Jets in Chicago tonight to face the Blackhawks. The Penguins in St. Paul tonight to face the Minnesota Wild. Do you know the goaltender for the Penguins yet for tonight, Matt? And then the flip side, of course, is that will it be the other goaltender tomorrow evening against the Jets?
Yeah, we do not know yet. The morning skate starts in about 45 minutes here, so we'll probably get a hint then. Typically, they would go Murray and then the backup goalie. We'll see. But, yeah, it would be very surprising if they went Murray back-to-back. I mean, I know they need him right now, and he's played well in 3 out of his 4 starts. But we haven't seen Tristan Jarry yet. He hasn't played an NHL game since, I think, last November, maybe early last December. So I think if I had to guess that we will see Jarry tomorrow night up there.
You know, Matt, just sticking with the goaltending situation, you know, you mentioned that we expect to see Tristan Jarry in one of these few games, and you know, he was a relatively high draft pick, second round. I forget exactly where he was taken in the second round, but, you know, it's an interesting situation with the goaltenders because you have Casey DeSmith, who signed a contract, I believe it was a 3-year contract back in January, and the belief was that he was going to be the backup, but for salary cap issues, he's been sent down to the American Hockey League. How do you see this playing out? Because I think most observers agree that, you know, the expectation is that Casey DeSmith is going to be the long-term backup.
Yeah, this has been a weird deal, and, you know, the Penguins have pretty much admitted that it's mostly financial. You know, even the day that they put Casey DeSmith on waivers, Jim Rutherford did a radio hit in Pittsburgh and called DeSmith the perfect number two goalie, and yet he was subject to waivers, and there was a chance the Penguins could have lost him. I mean, he's great, I think, for their situation because, you know, he does a lot of stuff behind the scenes. He's a hardworking guy. He's pretty much been like a backup his entire career. He has a very interesting story of how he's climbed the ranks from the ECHL to the American Hockey League team and all the way up, and he's mostly been a backup along the way. So he doesn't have an ego. He knows where he stands. And he also has shown the ability to, you know, not play for 10 days, 2 weeks, and come in and play well. And he sort of saved their season last year in November. I mean, the Penguins had lost like 10 of 11, and Murray went on IR for 4 weeks, and Casey was very good. So that's a long-winded answer of saying that he's really a good fit for what they need with, you know, a lead dog in Murray who they'd like to have play 55, 60 games. But they had to do this for cap reasons. You know, they didn't just want to lose Jarry. They felt that if they put him on waivers, that somebody would scoop him up. I don't know about that. I mean, Jarry was, I think he was like the 44th pick or something like that in 2013. But he's not like a blue-chip goaltending prospect. I think a lot of organizations have someone like him in their pipeline, maybe not as pro-ready. You know, I don't know if he's ever going to be a full-time NHL starter, maybe a platoon guy. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what he can do here, you know, coming in. I mean, in the past he's shown, there were questions, I guess, about his concentration and his ability to maybe go to play well when he wasn't getting a regular workload, so we'll see how he kind of fares, if he's only playing every couple weeks with Murray being the starter here.
You know, Matt, what's the long-term prognosis for Patrick Hornquist? I know he left the Jets game, came back, I believe. I think they said that he's avoided IR, but do you think that he's still the guy who can be as effective for the Penguins as he has been in the past?
That was a really big question mark coming into this year, and I think so far he's looked good. He dealt with two concussions in the first half of last season, and then I think he only had like three even strength goals from like January 6th on or something like that. It was really bad, and it was especially alarming because he's 32, he has a history of concussions, and he has 4 years left on a contract that pays him like $5.25 million a year or something like that. So, that was certainly a little bit of a risk that they took by signing a guy, as important as he has been to the team over the years. But he had a strong world championship, and I think that might have helped him get a little bit of his confidence back. He showed up, he looked a little leaner, maybe a little bit quicker during training camp, and then he's gotten back to doing those disruptive Patrick Hornquist type things. He has a couple goals already. Yeah, he took that shot in the foot, against the Jets. And, that was an interesting one because we were all kind of bracing to see if he would go on IR. And it turns out he was fine. But then Alex Galchenyuk went on IR out of nowhere after he played, made his way through the Jets game. But, Hornquist is in the lineup the other night. I expect he's going to be there this weekend. And, he's certainly a guy they need to, with all these guys out, to continue taking a bounce back from a really down year last year.
Last question for you, Matt. Matt Wenzel of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. In your Penguins chat yesterday on the Post-Gazette website, you were asked if Malkin is likely to be a Penguin at season's end. And you said, yes, he is, but that the more interesting situation to watch is that of defenseman Chris Letang. Why do you think that there's a possibility that Letang might be traded rather than Malkin, or even forgetting that part of the question, why do you think there's a possibility that Letang might be traded?
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird offseason here. I mean, the Penguins, Jim Rutherford had multiple opportunities to say that both Malkin and Letang were untouchable, and he didn't. I suspect it would have had to take a really special offer for him to move either one of those two guys, but they didn't. But I just think, there's certainly, there's a loyalty to a degree to those guys for everything they've done and everything they mean to the city. But I think, one, maybe there's a little bit more for Malkin. And also, I think, two, it's just in terms of moving a contract and the appeal, I feel like Letang has potential to be a more appealing trade asset than Malkin. And this is all under the assumption. I mean, if Malkin comes back and has this great year that it looked like he might have, he's not a guy that the Penguins are going to want to trade. And if he comes back and struggles, I don't know if he's going to have much appeal. But I think Letang was one of the league's top defensemen last year. He has a reasonable salary. And, I could see that if they move somebody, given some of the young blue liners they have coming up, that then maybe he's the one, if they try to blow things up a little bit, that could be on the out.
Matt Wenzel covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Matt, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Travel safe. We'll see you here in Winnipeg tomorrow evening.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Matt. When we come back, we discuss the Winnipeg Jets defense, then the decision to send Sammy Niku back to the Manitoba Moose. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Coach, what goes into the process of putting Sammy Niku back with the Moose?
I didn't have him in the game tomorrow night, and they're playing tonight. So we're not going to let a young guy that can play. I mean, practice was 30 minutes of passing, right? Light movement, get them ready for the game tomorrow. We wouldn't get a whole heck of a lot out of it. So we want those guys to get as much game time as we possibly can.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about the decision to send Sammy Niku down to the Manitoba Moose. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Blackhawks tonight in Chicago. The Jets and the Penguins tomorrow evening back here in Winnipeg. Dave, you were at last night's Moose Marlies game. Sammy Niku playing for the Moose. I guess first question, how did he look? Sort of, did he look exactly as you'd expect Sammy Niku at this point?
You know what? He is Sami Niku. I mean, he's dynamic with the puck. He's a good skater. Had one mistake in the first period, resulted in a goal. Now, you know, it's funny. People and Coach Vincent pointed this out after the game. You tend to focus on the one mistake that leads to the goal, but forget about the two or three mistakes that led to that one initially. And that's a fair assessment, because there were a number of miscues that happened that put Sami Niku into the position that he was in, and thereafter get caught flat-footed. But you know what? Coach Vincent said again after the game, he said you could see by the second period that Niku was getting stronger, and by the third period he was dominant. And it's true. You know, when you see this kid with the puck, he's just confident with it. He's got good head on his shoulders, he's got good wheels. So he has all the things that you need, all the tools that you would need in a young defenseman. He's not that young, but you know, to me, the key is, and I find it really interesting, is that it's the minutes. And that's what people are talking about. And I'm like, look, you don't want Niku sitting in the press box.
Well, let me stop you right there. Justify Anthony Boteto in the lineup over Sami Niku as a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, you're going to hear radio silence, not just in general because we're having technical issues, but you're going to hear radio silence for me anyways, because I wouldn't. Sami Niku is a much better defenseman than Anthony Boteto is at this point in his career, or at any point probably, versus Sami Niku. And to me, I don't understand it. I mean, maybe it's the physicality element. Maybe, you know, you want someone like Boteto who's bigger, more physical in front of the net than Niku. But the reality is, I think that changing dynamic of the Winnipeg team overall isn't a big surprise, that you're going away from that big physical player and to a guy. I mean, don't you want a guy who's going to control the puck, control play? Like, Sami Niku to me is a guy who should be in the lineup, but if he's not going to be, he's got to be with the Moose playing minutes.
That's a fair point, the second one. But the part of Boteto continuing to remain as one of the top six over Niku, to me, is completely inexplicable. Have you swallowed your chocolate cake, and are you ready to join the segment now?
I don't know why you're not having some.
Well, it's 10:55 in the morning. It's not my chocolate cake hour.
You know, on the topic,
yes.
I mean, a happy birthday, even though it was my sister-in-law Leia's birthday a couple of days ago. Uh-huh. A happy birthday to her. This is her chocolate cake, because obviously our listeners can't see the chocolate cake.
It's true. There's no
Maybe
camera
we'll,
in the
we'll
studio.
We'll post it on social media.
We
but,
don't need to
you
do
know,
that.
I brought three,
seen chocolate
three
cake.
Pieces of cake, and you guys are obviously too good to have a piece of cake in the morning, so I'm going to enjoy some chocolate cake. It's not too early for me. Drew, I've been up since 4:30 in the morning.
Can you justify Anthony Boteto staying in the Jets lineup over Sami Niku? We know you can justify your consumption of chocolate cake.
Well, I mean, it's cake, baby. But when you're talking about, when you're talking about Niku and Boteto, I can't make a valid argument. I was very surprised that Boteto was in the lineup for Sami Niku, and that's no disrespect to Anthony Boteto, but we all view Boteto as a depth defenseman on the NHL, as opposed to Niku, Dave, who we kind of had penciled into the top four, especially with Buff out of the lineup, right? So I realize there are a lot of Jets fans that were scratching their heads, and not just Jets fans. I mean, people in the media, ourselves included. I'd like to think that we're in the media. And so when you're talking about, you know, Niku being scratched, I realized that Niku didn't play a lot in the preseason and he had the minor injury and all that. But further to Dave's point, I mean, he played last night against the Marlies. He's going to play again this afternoon. And I think, you know, people have to take a deep breath, because we know, guys, that after tonight's game between the Jets and the Blackhawks, the Jets have six games coming up at home. So would any of us be surprised if the Jets recall Niku next week and he plays either against the Coyotes or the Islanders? Like, I don't think any of us expect Niku to be with the Moose long term. Like, this is a very short term thing, I think.
Him being with the Moose that's, I think, the problem. It's the fact that, you know, Anthony Boteto, they're electing to play Dmitry Kulikov on the right side and keep Boteto in the lineup on the left side, rather than putting Kulikov back on his left side and putting Niku on the right side where he's comfortable.
No, and I mean, I agree. I mean, it's a little bit mind-boggling when you think about it in terms of Boteto over Niku. I think Kulikov, now that he's back, because obviously his wife gave birth, I mean, obviously you expect Kulikov to be in the top six right now. That's not a surprise.
I don't have a problem with Dmitry
Kulikov. That's what I'm saying, Drew. I think, you know, after these games, I mean, I wouldn't expect him to be in the lineup, Niku in the lineup tomorrow versus Pittsburgh. But I think with all these home games coming up, like I mentioned, Arizona and the Islanders next week, and then you've got a couple of days off before they play the Oilers on Sunday, I would be shocked if we don't see Niku in one of those games.
But why wasn't Niku in the lineup on Thursday, Dave?
Well, I'll let Dave answer, but I mean, Paul Maurice gave his answer, and I mean, I still, after hearing Maurice's answer, I still don't get it.
I think it's fair. I think, again, the only thing I can think of is that Paul Maurice has a tendency, as we've seen, to default towards veteran players. And so I think maybe, you know, just trying to get into his head as to think as to why he would choose to go with a guy who's at the back end of his career versus a guy who, you know, was a star defenseman in the AHL. To me, the only thing I can think of is, you know, you wanting a more veteran lineup, because it really is somewhat inexplicable to have a guy of Niku's ability, you know, in the press box or with the Moose. And again, like I said, I think it's ideal for him to be with the Moose and playing, you know, the majority of the minutes for the AHL affiliate. I never, ever say that's a bad thing for a player. But again, it does scratch, you know, and I wrote it. And in fact, I thought it was slightly because they were going to have to take Brian Little off IR and get roster compliance. So I thought Nico's the only guy who can pass through waivers or doesn't need to clear waivers to go to the Moose. So I thought maybe that was what was happening. But then yesterday we saw Brian Little in a gold non-contact, meaning he's still on IR. So again, a curious move. The only thing I can think of is it's the default to veteran player, or maybe Paul Maurice didn't like what he saw in Niku's game in Pittsburgh. I mean, again, it doesn't make a lot of sense because from what you see in Sami Niku, it's not a bad, he's a pretty good hockey player. And so to me, again, a little bit of a curious move. We'll see how it plays out for the rest of the year.
Last word on this, on the Jets defense so far, goes to Jets head coach Paul Maurice. When we come back, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is going to join us.
You're pretty happy with what you're getting from your defense corps?
Yeah. There's lots of room for improvement. Like, we're giving up way more than we want to. I'm happy with them. I don't think there's a weak link there. I think I got lots of time for Carl's game and Sam's game in Pittsburgh. So you'll see the guys that are here are going to play. I don't know when I'm going to rotate them, but you know, we're still giving up more than, you know, that's where we got to get better in our game. We're generating enough. We got enough shooters that we should be able to put some pucks in the net, but we're still giving up more than we want to.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets tonight. The Jets and the Blackhawks, 6 p.m. puck drop in Chicago. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290-90, where standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Associated Press, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Stephen Wino. Stephen, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Doing very well, Stephen. Obviously brought you on to look around the NHL through the first 2 weeks, 10 days, somewhere around in that vicinity so far in this 2019-20 season. A couple teams that are off to surprising starts, and I would begin with the Edmonton Oilers with their perfect record, 4-0, 8 points so far. This Oilers team certainly lighting the lamp with 18 goals for so far this season. From your perspective, Stephen, is this Oilers team for real, or is this just more of a function of, you know, with a McDavid and with a Draisaitl and a Nugent Hopkins and a James Neal playing out of his mind, they're just not as bad as they certainly were last season?
I think they're for real, and they're not 82-0 for real, but this is a team that should make the playoffs given the amount of talent there, certainly in the forward core. But this is for me a big difference in coaching. This is Dave Tippett coaching a team. And I thought they'd be a better defensive team with Dave Tippett in charge, that the structure that he brings to a team is similar to what Barry Trotz did to the New York Islanders. But when you have that much talent and you have a coaching style that is go get the puck and play with the puck, and you've got a Draisaitl, a McDavid, a James Neal, a Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and kind of all that talent there, that it's turned into a lot of offense. The biggest question for me long-term is Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith in goal. Are they able to hold up if things break down as the season goes on? But, yeah, the offensive talent is there, and if Connor McDavid is able to get on a roll, this should absolutely be a playoff team and honestly maybe a Stanley Cup contender.
Steven, sticking with undefeated teams, I mean, we have to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes because I think you'd agree that You know, you saw what the Hurricanes did last year, going all the way to the Eastern Conference Final, ultimately losing to the Boston Bruins. But you thought, okay, well, how are they going to come out to start the season? All the changes that they made, and, you know, they start off the season 5-0. And what's probably been the most impressive is, as opposed to the Oilers, the quality of competition has been really good. You know, you beat teams like the Washington Capitals, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers that we know are better this year, and the Hurricanes handled them quite easily. I mean, what's impressed you the most about the Hurricanes? Is it the balanced scoring? Because Sebastian Aho, he only has one goal in five games. It's really been, you know, coming from a variety of sources, the offense, that is.
Yeah, and a lot of offense from the defense there. I mean, you look at what Dougie Hamilton has created on that blue line. Jake Gardner's been a positive player, positive addition for Carolina. Look, guys, I thought the Hurricanes were a fluke. I did. I thought Carolina was a one-year wonder. And that without the goaltending they got last year from Curtis McElhinney and Peter Mrazek, that they would take a step back this year. And so far, I look unbelievably wrong, just because you're right. Like, you've seen the balance of scoring, and imagine if Sebastian Aho gets going, that what kind of depth of offense the team can have. It's a blow with having Jordan Martinook out for a significant period of time, but there's enough of depth of forwards there. They've got a strong blue line, even after trading Justin Falk. That this is a team that is continues to surprise, and it's not really smoke and mirrors. It's Peter Mrazek's played well in goal. They've got a balanced scoring attack. They're not those offensive guys on the blue line can also defend at the same time. And really, it is the same sort of way the Hurricanes won last year, the same way the Blues won, where it's not one or two stars, but it's a bunch of guys kind of putting it all together. That's how Carolina is going to win and has been winning.
You know, Stephen, if you look at the Western Conference standings, a lot of the teams that are in the top eight right now are teams you'd expect. One team that catches my eye, though, is the Anaheim Ducks. They're 4-1 to start this season. They're a team that I don't know that there was a lot expected, but when you have John Gibson in net, you know, you really should have high expectations because he's that good of a goaltender. But what have been your early impressions of this Anaheim Ducks team?
That John Gibson's been terrific, that he was primed for a bounce back year. And also that not having Randy Carlyle or Bob Murray as coach is a big improvement. And Dallas Eakins knows that system from being in San Diego. He knows a lot of the young players in that organization. He's been in camp before. So having a new coach but also having a familiarity with the players there and the system that those guys are used to playing is a big help. And you see guys like Andre Kasha and those sort of young players. Silverberg was not really young anymore, that they're growing into the roles that Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry had for so long. And this is a good team. I don't know if they can keep it up. I would tend to believe Anaheim takes a step back more so than a team like Carolina or Edmonton does. I'm going to need a little bit longer a period of time before I believe the Anaheim Ducks are a legitimate playoff contender.
Stephen Wino is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets and the Chicago Blackhawks tonight in Chicago, 6 p.m. puck drop. You know, Stephen, last year I remember back in the Buffalo Sabres got off to that torrid start where they were, I believe, the best team in the league after 12 games. And then, you know, certainly things fell apart at that point in time. So far this year, again, undefeated in regulation, 4-0-1. Are they more for real this year than they were last year, or do you also expect them to have a similar drop-off to what we saw last season?
Goaltending is my big question there, whether Carter Hutton can keep this sort of pace up. But I hate to sound like a broken record, guys. This is coaching, too. And Ralph Kruger bringing back some of the kind of philosophies he learned from European hockey. Ralph Kruger, who put in the structure that is going to help players like Jack Eichel succeed, but Eichel is taking that next step right now into being an elite star. Not that he was not a great player before, but we've seen him take over games this season, and he is the biggest bright spot I see on a Buffalo team right now, that if that team is going to make the playoffs, it's going to be because of Jack Eichel, and whether that's him growing up as a mature person, whether that's him kind of putting together the veterans he's playing with in addition to getting something from Ralph Kruger. Jack Eichel is the key there, and there's some talent there, but I thought they were a year away. And they might still be a year away from being a playoff team. We just see this in the NHL all the time. It doesn't take a whole lot for a team to go from last or in the bottom five in a league or in a conference to going and being in the playoffs. Buffalo would be a contender for that if the goaltending stays at least solid.
Steven, I wanted to ask you about an article that you wrote a couple of days ago, and it's not just because Bobby Clark was featured, who's from Flin Flon, and as these guys know, my dad grew up with Bobby Clark in Flin Flon, but I thought it was a really interesting article. Obviously, Max Domi was the main protagonist in the article that you had up on AssociatedPress.com. He, of course, has diabetes. He has a new book that's coming out, and you know, a big part of your story is how Bobby Clark influenced Ty Domi. And you know, Bobby Clark, it was well known that the reason why he was drafted a little bit later in 1969 was because back then they didn't know as much as they know about diabetes. And why did you feel that this article was necessary to write? And then what did you learn about, you know, Max Domi specifically? Obviously had a great year last year with the Canadians, but, you know, kind of an interesting article, something that you don't hear a lot about in the hockey world.
Yeah, it's something that Max Domi obviously cares a lot about. To write the book, to kind of, he says he meets with kids who have diabetes at basically every home game in Montreal, and it's obviously a topic that means a lot to him and affects his life in a great deal, because this is a guy who literally every time he plays a game, the preparation starts 24 hours ahead of time. He's got to prepare his body and put food aside and kind of measure his blood sugar from 24 hours before a game so that it doesn't affect him in game. And it's such a different life than what Bobby Clark had to deal with, because as Bobby said to me, it's like, it was pretty simple back then. There was only one kind of insulin. You couldn't measure anything. You pricked your finger, you did this and that, and that was it. Like you just went out and played. And as long as he ate, he was pretty okay. And for Max Domi to kind of, I think he appreciates that from Bobby Clark, that he could go through without the technological advancements that he has now, and kind of being able to read his body and know the blood sugar level and all that, that Bobby Clark was able to have a Hall of Fame career, that's the most inspiring thing. And not that Max Domi has it easy, he doesn't, and Bobby Clark is kind of keeping an eye on it. And he said, it wasn't an excuse for me. I never wanted to be a diabetic hockey player. I was a hockey player with diabetes, and I didn't want it to be an excuse. And he said, basically, of Max Domi and probably to Max Domi years and years ago, that it can't be an excuse, that just because you have this disease doesn't mean you can't play hockey and doesn't mean you can't play hockey at a high level.
You know, Stephen, the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia underwent a $265 million overhaul. And as part of that, they added a rage room. And we know that Flyers fans are known for their rage, you know, the Broad Street Bullies and all. But do you think, you know, they're off to a 2-0 start. They're missing their number two overall pick from 2017, Nolan Patrick, who is out with a migraine disorder. But do you think that there's reasons for positivity in Philadelphia, or do you think they're going to be using that rage room quite a bit this season?
I think the rage room is good right now because there has been a lot of frustration and has been over 40 years since a championship there. It's good to have a place for rage, and there's going to be some bad games this year, but Alain Vigneault has changed things there. He's been a help there. Kevin Hayes has been better than I thought very early on this season. Carter Hart is a reason, though, that this team could and should turn things around now. This is the franchise goal kind of the Flyers have been waiting decades for, probably. I mean, at least since Kelly Lindbergh and Ron Hextall in the 80s, that Carter Hart, if he's able to stay healthy, and if Brian Elliott is able to spell him to where Carter Hart doesn't have to play 65 games a season, the sky's the limit for the Flyers, because I think whether you're Chuck Fletcher or the rest of that organization, Claude Giroux and Jacob Voracek aren't getting any younger. There's only so much time left in those guys' prime that they're filtering in the younger talent. You're going to see a Joel Farabee there in a few years. Ivan Provorov's got the big extension, and he's going to be a number one defenseman there for a long time. There's a lot of talent on that team. Putting the coach as the next step there is a huge improvement, in my opinion, over Dave Hackstall, who is a good coach and was a great coach at the college level, but never seemed like he fit in the NHL with professional players. Alain Vigneault has taken two teams to the Stanley Cup final, and maybe not this year, but in the next few years, he could certainly make it a third with Philadelphia.
Steven, last question for you. Steven Wino's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We were talking last week that, you know, there wasn't an overwhelming candidate to be the first NHL head coach to lose their job in the middle of the season. I think I may have spoken too soon. Right now, from your perspective, is Mike Babcock maybe the leader in the clubhouse regarding head coaches who might lose their job mid-season?
No, I think it's John Hines, honestly. I do. And not that Mike Babcock might not be under some fire there, but when you have a Stanley Cup ring, when you have the contract Mike Babcock has, it provides some protection there. And I know that the New Jersey Devils just signed John Hines to to a contract extension, but things are bad in New Jersey right now. And for all the things that are going wrong in Toronto right now, where the defense isn't being able to stop anything, Freddie Anderson is struggling a little bit, I think there's a little bit more patience there. The Devils came in with Wayne Simmonds, with P.K. Subban, with a potential last year for Taylor Hall with some major expectations. And not to pin this all on John Hines, but something is just wrong in the mix or in the chemistry and something going on in New Jersey. And if I had to bet money on it right now, I think John Hines is the first coach to be fired.
Let me follow up with Alan and Steven. Look at their goaltending situation. How is that on Hines for expecting that, you know, Blackwood and Schneider are going to hold up for 82 games as a goaltending tandem?
It's not necessarily on him, and I think Ray Shiro does have to take some responsibility for that. I do think Mackenzie Blackwood, he's not in the Carter Hart division of this. He's not going to be, or the Ilya Samsonov kind of department of this, but he is that next tier of kind of goaltenders of the future for the Devils. And the question now is, how do you bridge that gap? Is there a goaltender out there they can acquire who's an improvement over Corey Schneider, who you can't get rid of because of that contract? But the thing that John Hines always had was a strong system, that he was able to put a team together that could control the puck and not have to worry about a goaltender being standing on his head. That's an issue now, and that's, I think, the reason why John Hines might take the fall here.
Stephen Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. He's a good friend of this program. Stephen, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Stephen. When we come back, buy or sell through the first 2 weeks of this NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Tell you what, Mika Zibanejad is just evolving into that complete dominant drive play center iceman. And you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of another Swedish player that got traded, Marcus Naslund. Marcus became the captain of the Vancouver Canucks. There's a lot of talk about Mika Zibanejad being in line to be the next captain of the New York Rangers.
TSN hockey analyst, director of scouting, Craig Button, talking about Mika Zibanejad. How about 8 points in two games to start for Zibanejad? Somehow the Rangers have only played twice, despite a lot of other teams playing five or six games at this point in the season, but that's a separate issue that we already talked about earlier on the program. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. This segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, all the way from sunny Los Angeles and certainly not rethinking his life's decisions, J.R. DeGuzman in town. Can you imagine that, coming from L.A. and this is what you land into?
Well, it depends. If he landed on Monday or Tuesday, he was loving it.
He didn't. He landed on Thursday.
Well, then he's got a problem.
That's former Blue Jay pitcher Juan Guzman's brother.
Yes, except this guy's name is DeGuzman, so they are pronounced and spelled differently, but good effort there. I appreciate that. Anyways, J.R. DeGuzman at Rumors tonight.
Remember
two shows.
Blue Glove? Juan Guzman?
I do remember.
Love that blue glove.
That's good.
Good pitcher.
You done? Now you're done? Okay.
In fact, with the McDonald's, you remember the McDonald's used to give out the baseball cards?
Yes.
And he was featured prominently in them.
I only remember the McDonald's Russian hockey sticks.
Yes.
No, that, but then do you remember the McDonald's pizza?
Yes.
They were delicious pizza.
I like the McDonald's pizza.
I actually love the McDonald's pizza. I thought they were good, mostly because we were getting hockey cards with the
why
pizza.
Why did McDonald's, by the way, go with Russian sticks? Like, why wouldn't they have gone with Canadian or American sticks?
Maybe we should have been. Maybe they were the Trojan horse that led to the situation that we're all in North America right now. How about that? Maybe that's what happened, but I don't want to say any more on that topic.
Yeah, Drew, we'll leave the InfoWars for another show.
Anyways, buy or sell through the first couple weeks of the NHL season.
I think
season.
We're going to sell you, Drew, so I don't even think we have to go through with this segment.
Don't even ask us.
I'm pretty sure you used that joke last year when we did this segment also. Let's start.
I've used it for more years than that. But.
Let's start with the guy we mentioned off the top, Mika Zibanejad. 8 points, 4 goals, 4 assists in 2 games played for the Rangers. Obviously, he's not going to average 4 points a game. But buy or sell Mika Zibanejad as an elite, entering the elite status in the NHL?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it depends what you're talking about with elite. He's certainly a number one center in the NHL. I don't think he's
a top 20 forward. How about that?
Top 20 center?
No, top 20 forward.
No, he's not a top 20 forward. I think he's a really talented
player. There's only 30. I mean, isn't he already a top 20 center? There's only 31, you know, top centers in the league.
Yeah, but just because you're the first line center for a team doesn't necessarily mean you're a top 20 or top 30 center.
Valid.
Yeah. Team could have two top centers.
Right. So exactly. So when you're talking about Zibanejad, he's absolutely a gifted. I mean, look at the goal he scored against the Jets. I mean, you mentioned it, Drew. He's got back-to-back four-point nights to start the season. So, I mean, he's well on pace to shatter his previous highs. So, a really talented player. You know, also a really good playmaker. He's a guy that can put the puck in the net and also set up his teammates. So, you know, is he going to be the future captain of the Rangers? Possibly. But, you know, he's a guy, you know, you remember he was drafted right before Mark Scheifele. The pick right before Scheifele, I think it was sixth overall, and then Scheifele was seventh overall, right? And then you had Couturier going after that. And you remember Zibanejad on the Senators took a while to get going, and mm-hmm. we kind of weren't sure what his ceiling is. And you look at him now, and what's his ceiling? 90 points?
Well, seems to be. I mean, you're off to this incredible start, and you know you're playing
at least 80,
and you're playing with Artemi Panarin. I mean, you know, that doesn't hurt at all. That usually helps boost your totals right now. So, I mean, let me put it this way. I have Zibanejad in your hockey pool, and I'm enjoying my selection of Zibanejad so far.
So, Joe, you know, for the purposes of this segment, you know, I'm going buy.
Dave?
Well, that's clearly a buy. Look at the sell job as he just did.
Fair enough. Let's move on to...
I'm buying Zibanejad stock, Drew.
Anthony Mantha, 6 goals in his first 4 games for the Detroit Red Wings. Another former first-round pick sort of trying to get his... trying to sort of break into that next level of forward. Dave, you follow the Red Wings, having previously lived in Detroit. Buy or sell Anthony Mantha?
Well, I never lived in Detroit. I lived near Detroit. But
close enough. You went to Red Wings games.
I did go to a lot of Red Wings games. Not when he was playing, but I did go to a lot of Red Wings games.
Yeah.
Drew, you got to know, every time you come up with a segment idea, we're going to mock you and
I know
in any
give
capacity.
You a hard time.
No, I mean, look, he's playing with Larkin and Bertuzzi, and I like Bertuzzi. Bertuzzi put in his dues in Grand Rapids, like the Red Wings traditionally do with most of their younger players. And you know, Mantha's, you know, increased his goal total year after year, went from 17 to 24 last year. He put up 25. You know, he's a consistent performer. Now, are we seeing Mantha who's, you know, ready to take that next step in his game? Well, you know, it's a little bit early in the season to make that prediction, but he's clearly already on pace to eclipse his goals and his assist mark for the last, you know, couple of seasons. And again, he's a highly ranked, you know, he was a 20th overall pick back in 2013. He's a really good hockey player, very good shot. So to me, I'm buying, you know, what Anthony Mantha is doing right now, because I think the opportunity is there, the talent is there. So I think it's a perfect storm for him to continue to flourish in Detroit.
Look, he had 25 goals last year, and he missed 15 games.
That's right.
And, you know, you go back to junior, he scored 57 goals in his last year for Val-d'Or. I mean, this guy's a sniper. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Anthony Mantha, the question I don't think they ever had in Detroit was, can he score goals at the NHL level? It's that he had kind of lulls and scoring droughts. And, you know, Detroit, granted, hasn't been very good for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years at least. But when you're talking about Mantha, I think what they've been looking for is that cliche consistency, like you talked about, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about, you know, Mantha, I mean, absolutely, I think he can be a top line right winger at the NHL level. And, you know, he has to round out his game as well. I mean, we know that, you know, most, you know, young players are always improving. And I mean, he's not as young now. He's 25, but you know, he took a while to develop, but absolutely, you know, he's going to have a breakout season this year. He's not going to score 4 goals every game, but you know, if his previous career high was 25 last year, I think, you know, he might be, you know, 35 to 40 this year. So, I mean, I'm buying on Mantha. He's a really good player.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day, talking about some teams and their surprising pro and con starts to the season so far, buying or selling their performances so far. The Buffalo Sabres, 4-0-1, undefeated in regulation. And we mentioned about it with Steven Wino earlier this hour, that they had a great start to the year last year and then fell off. Buy or sell the Buffalo Sabres right now?
It's a tough one because, you know, Jack Eichel is absolutely fine. I mean, we've all seen, you know, his highlights this year. I mean, Jack Eichel, I think, is well on his way to having a career year. And, you know, he's already had a really good start to his NHL career. To me, it's going to all come down to goaltending. We talked about New Jersey, right? And when you're talking about, you know, Mackenzie Blackwood and Corey Schneider, you know, that's not I think, a tandem right now that brings a lot of confidence. So when you're talking about Linus Ullmark and Carter Hutton, Ullmark played yesterday. Sabres lost in the shootout. But when you're talking about, you know, Carter Hutton, or did they win in the shootout?
They won in the shootout.
Oh, they win? Okay. Sure I should have known. I was watching that game. But when you're I knew it went to a shootout, but, you know.
They won. They beat the Panthers 3-2 in the shootout.
Yeah, I was hoping for the Panthers for our boy Richie. But when you're talking about, you know, the Sabres, we had Marty Biron on last week. I mean, he was talking about the goaltending, and, you know, Carter Hutton, you know, came over and from St. Louis, and there was a lot expected out of him, and, you know, he struggled at times. But the thing I liked is the moves that Jason Botterill made. And, you know, a guy like, you know, Casey Mittelstadt, obviously, you know, more is expected out of him in his second year. But, you know, Marcus Johansson, Dave, you know, Colin Miller, Henry Jokiharju. I mean, he's made some nice moves there. On paper, the Sabres are a better team. But it's just too early for me to buy because it quite simply comes down to the division they play in. I still think it's going to be an absolute dogfight to get one of those last wild card spots. So I'm going to say sell on the Sabres. I think they're probably going to have, you know, 15 or 20 more points than they did last year because they couldn't get much worse than they were last year. I just don't know if they're going to, you know, be good enough to get into the playoffs. And a lot of it has to do with the goaltending.
I think Ezzy was doing that because he picked Botterill as GM of the year. So I think he was pumping.
Well, you got to go with a good Winnipeg board.
And I have Ralph Kruger as the coach of the year because I have the Sabres as my dark horse in the playoff team.
I was going to say you're loving the Sabres start simply because you had them as a team seeing, you know, making the playoffs.
It's true. Last one for you, David Minuk. Anaheim Ducks 4-1. You asked Stephen Wino about it. You know, buy or sell the Anaheim Ducks right now?
Well, I honestly, with any team with John Gibson, you have to buy. He's that good a goaltender. He's a top goaltender in the NHL. He's just phenomenal. I like Ryan Miller as his backup. You know, he's a veteran guy. He can get in there, play a game. Games, you know, knows his role on that team. So I think it's a really good goaltending tandem. And I think Steven made a really good point. I think Dallas Eakins, you know, having coached in San Diego, knows that system. I mean, that's the advantage to having your AHL coach. If he's capable coming up and keep coaching, because he knows the players. He knows the system that they're running because they generally try and follow the same system in their American Hockey League teams. So to me, you know, what Eakins has brought in that terms of that stability on the bench, and then you've got stability in the net. I really like what the Anaheim Ducks are doing right now.
I'm not buying yet on the Ducks, Dave, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I mean, Cam Fowler is probably looking the best he's looked in a long time. We talked about John Gibson. We know John Gibson is a top 10, maybe even top 3 goalie in the NHL, and the numbers, the save percentage and all that. I mean, that confirms what I just said. But when you're talking about, you know, the first 5 games, 2-1, 3-1, you know, 2-1, 3-1, 2-1, they lost to the Pittsburgh Penguins, but they're holding teams to one or two goals. Mm-hmm. But you look at their schedule coming up, they beat the Blue Jackets last game 2-1, but they've got the Bruins coming up, then the Sabres, who we were just talking about, the Hurricanes, the Flames, the Predators, the Dallas Stars, the Colorado Avalanche, the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, I could go on and on here, but the point is, the Oilers have a little bit of an easier schedule, so I think they can probably sustain this in the short term. But the Ducks are going to be playing some really good teams, some playoff teams from last year. So I agree with you that the Ducks have been a great surprise. John Gibson has been excellent, just like he was last year. But for me, it's a little bit early to say that I think the Ducks have turned the corner.
Well, one of the most eye-popping starts to this 2019-20 season belongs to the Edmonton Oilers, undefeated 4-0 so far. When we come back, we'll talk about the Oilers' start to the season and whether or not we think that is sustainable. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ken Holland talked specifically about adding more skill. He needed more skill. He made an unbelievable trade for James Neal, regardless of James Neal scoring. He did that in the summer. It was a great trade because he had to remove Lucic. And that's not an indictment against Milan personally. It's about his play on the ice.
That's more from TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button talking about the Oilers and their impressive start to the season, led, of course, by James Neal, who has regained the scoring touch that he lost last season in Calgary. That's a terrible trade for the Flames. It was a terrible trade the day it happened. It's proven to be an even worse trade as you see James Neal get off to this great start for the Oilers. 4-0 for the Oilers, 18 goals for in those 4 games, you know, 12 goals against, which is obviously too many. But right now the Oilers are playing some fun 1980 style run and gun hockey. Is it sustainable? Is this team really going to be a threat? Are they possibly going to be a playoff team out of the weak Pacific Division? Or do you think eventually the lack of depth catches up to them?
I think that their lack of depth might catch up to them, Drew, but it goes back to what we were talking about with the Buffalo Sabres last segment, right? Or the Anaheim Ducks. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see 10 to 15 games. I want to see that sample size. I don't want to see a 4 or 5 game sample size. Going back to, you know, even, you know, earlier in the show when we were talking about Chicago. I mean, Chicago's lost their first two games of the year, so you don't want to get, you know, too excited, but you also don't want to go 0-3 or 0-4, right? So, I mean, look at the teams the Oilers have played. They haven't really played any great teams. I mean, the best team they've played is the Islanders. So, yeah, sure, you pick up wins over, you know, the Canucks and Kings and Islanders and Devils, and the other team was the Rangers. They play the Rangers today. That's their fifth game. So, you know, you haven't really faced an elite team, and that includes today. I mean, the Rangers are obviously improved from last season. But, you know, you're not really going to face a great team until you play the Jets in 2 weeks, right? I mean, they play the Jets two Sundays from now in Winnipeg. But, you know, you've got teams like Chicago, Philadelphia, Detroit coming up. So, I mean, we were talking about this. The Ducks have a much harder schedule than the Oilers. So, for me, yeah, the Oilers can probably keep this going for a little bit. But, you know, how many 6-5, you know, 4-3, 5-4 games can you win, Dave? And, you know, I think Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith have given them, you know, slightly above average goaltending. I mean, the big story, though, is what we just mentioned, or what Craig Button just mentioned, Drew. James Neal, 7 goals in 4 games after he has 7 goals all year last year with Calgary, mm-hmm. you know, playing in a top six role. I mean, this trade could not have worked out better so far for the Oilers organization. So, I mean, that's the big story. But, you know, you're talking, you know, when you're talking about, you know, players like Jujhar Khaira, I mean, he's been very impressive on that third line. Leon Draisaitl, he hasn't missed a step since last year's 50-goal, 100-point season. So it's really impressive when you consider they're doing this without Adam Larson. And we talked about that last week. Ethan Bear, you know, good Saskatchewan boy, he's actually playing a top-four role for the Oilers right now, and he hasn't looked completely out of place. So, you know, players like Darnell Nurse and Oscar Klefbom, they're playing big minutes, and you'd expect them to play big minutes even with Adam Larson in the lineup. But, you know, for me, the reason why it might not be sustainable is because you're missing Larson, who's, you know, been a staple of your top-four. You know, how much longer are they going to keep this going when they're playing better teams? Like we talked about, once you play, you know, teams like the Jets, the Washington Capitals, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightnings, the Toronto Maple Leafs, teams like that, that's when I think they're going to run into trouble.
Well, there's an interesting article in the Edmonton Journal. Dave Staples talks about the Oilers' start to the season and things that are going well, but then he points out that their high danger chances against are actually way on the wrong side of the ledger, and that they are succeeding in spite of that, and that's a problem going forward, Dave.
Yeah, but I think ultimately what this all comes back to is what Ezzie's pointed out, is the fact that their schedule has been an easy one. And I think that, you know, look, we always talk about it throughout the year, how important it is to win games early in the season to be able to build up that buffer. So when you, you know, need those wins later on, if you don't get them, it's not going to harm you as much because you've managed to kind of save up a little bit from October, November. So clearly what the Oilers are doing is necessary. I mean, we're not discounting that. But I mean, again, when you look at the teams that they've beaten, they're not playoff teams. They haven't been huge tests from that perspective. So to me, you know, like Ezzie said, to Ezzie's point, when it gets into November, that's the question for me about Edmonton. When you play St. Louis, Anaheim, Colorado, Dallas, San Jose. Well, San Jose's not very good, but Vegas. So you've got some teams.
They should be better.
They should be better. But, you know, so you've got some teams. And honestly, the Sharks' loss could be Edmonton's gain, right? Because if Edmonton is able to fill the void that the Sharks are currently leaving, well, then maybe we're talking about it. But to me, again, you really, the big test for Edmonton is against that real good competition later on in November.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, going back to, you know, what we were talking about, Ethan Bear, not only is he playing in the top four, he's actually on the top pair with Darnell Nurse. But you look at that right side, Ethan Bear, Joel Person, who I honestly don't know a lot about, and Matt Benning, who's obviously been an Oilers staple on the defense for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. But, you know, the right side with Nurse, Oscar Klefbom, and Chris Russell, no problem with that. But that right side, I mean, it's very unproven. I'm not saying it's the worst in the NHL, but it's certainly not the best in the NHL. So, you know, further to Dave's point and what I was mentioning earlier, Drew, I mean, this Oilers team, look, they're going to score goals, especially now that they've added James Neal, you know, who you would kind of say is more secondary scoring after Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl.
Which is certainly what they needed. They had no secondary scoring behind Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins and McDavid last year.
So you can put a guy like Zach Cassian on the top line and you're still, you know, going to get great production from McDavid and Draisaitl, and same thing goes for Nugent Hopkins and Neal on that second line. But, you know, then it starts to really thin out, right? Then you're expecting guys like Marcus Granlund, Alex Chiasson. You know, we mentioned Jujhar Kara. I mean, you're not expecting a lot of offense out of Kara, but, you know, Riley Sheahan has actually really looked nice as their fourth line center. So I just think it's too early to say, you know, this Oilers team is looking good and they're well on their way to a playoff spot. Let's wait till we get to, you know, the 15 game mark, the 20 game mark after they've played some good teams. Because, you know, as you mentioned, Drew, referencing David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, you know, the Oilers are giving up a lot of shots. And, you know, right now, Koskinen and Mike Smith are bailing them out. So, I mean, they're going to have to shore that up defensively. I just don't know right now if they have the talent on the blue line to do that.
And to your point about the goaltending, that's okay right now. We've all seen what happens when bad Mike Smith shows up. We saw it last year in Calgary. You know, bad Mike Smith is not a good goaltender. And Mikko Koskinen, despite the absurd contract that was handed out to him last season, is very much a question mark as well. I mean, I think with the Oilers fans, you know, they're obviously ecstatic to the start to the season. They just seem more professional with Ken Holland in charge and with Dave Tippett behind the bench. There's just an aura of professionalism that has been missing from the organization for the past decade. And that's no disrespect to, you know, Todd McClellan and Ken Hitchcock, because those guys are professional head coaches. But the culture, it seems as though it's changed by having Holland in charge and by having Tippett there. There seems to be more of a focus and less of the chaos that we were used to seeing from the Oilers.
Well, and to that point, Drew, I mean, as we always know, you know, they say it's easier to change a coach or a GM than it is to change all the players on the team.
Right.
But when you've done that, guess what happens next? It's the players. So, you know, the players have to know now that any changes is happening with the lineup. It's not going to be happening at the coaching level or at the GM level. So from that perspective, they know it's on them. Like there's nobody to point a finger at. So really, it's incumbent on this team to pull together and show what they're able to do on the ice.
And back to what you said before, Dave, and I mentioned this as well about the schedule. I mean, if the Oilers were 2-2 or 1-3, we would be saying, well, how could they be 2-2 or 1-3 based on their competition? So, you know, good on the Oilers for starting off the season 4-0. Hopefully they can, you know, make it 5-0 tonight against the Rangers. I just think, you know, once you get into that tougher competition, starting with the Jets, I think it's going to be sustainable, you know, with that blue line.
The positive that they have going for them, of course, is that they play in that Pacific division, which, you know, is certainly not the toughest of the NHL's division, to put it politely. When we come back, one final segment, we're going to look around the NHL, talk about some news and notes, going to preview what's ahead on the day here on a very busy Saturday here on TSN Radio 1290. Much more to come. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Erik Karlsson fires through a crowd, deflected in by, oh, you know who, Patrick Marleau. Then late in the second, Mr. Shark coming for more.
Now Marleau, he'll work it up top. Burns, shot, trickles through, they score! Patrick Marleau scores again!
Welcome back, Patrick Marleau. He returns to the San Jose Sharks after signing a one-year contract after getting bought out by the Maple Leafs this summer. I guess he technically got bought out by the Hurricanes after being traded by the Maple Leafs in the salary cap maneuvering. But Marleau returns to the San Jose Sharks, signs a one-year contract, and immediately scores two goals in his first game back in a Sharks uniform after a couple seasons with the Maple Leafs. Not a bad return. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment. Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. Keep your radio tuned to the station all day long. Coming up after us a little bit later this afternoon, of course, you got Blue and Gold Game Day between Bombers and the Alouettes. And then, of course, after that, you have the coverage of the Jets and Blackhawks tonight as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on the station. So a tremendously busy day. Let's be honest, you don't want to leave your house. It's pretty lousy outside. Just flick on your radio, kick your feet up, and keep it tuned here to your home of sports in Winnipeg, TSN Radio 1290.
It's the Winnipeg local sports trifecta. Moose, Bombers, Jets.
Yeah, all in action today.
I don't think the Gold Eyes are going to play in this weather, but, you know.
I'm not sure.
Maybe it'll happen one day.
Is Valor FC playing today? I'm not sure if they're on the road somewhere as well. But, yeah, it is a very busy sports day here in Winnipeg with all three teams in action. As you mentioned, the Moose and the Marlies, they go this afternoon on moosehockey.com.
They've got a really handsome guy doing color today.
Oh, yeah? Who's doing color today?
I think it's Dave.
I know it is. I was being sarcastic. I mean, I knew it was Dave. Dave Manuka doing color for the Moose and Marlies matchup. Him and Daniel Fink, you can get that on moosehockey.com. Very busy sports day this afternoon here in Winnipeg. What do you think about Marlowe re-signing in San Jose? Gets the one-year deal, veteran
what
presence?
What took so long? I mean, I think we all knew that Marlowe wanted to finish his career in San Jose, right? I mean, the Leafs trade him. The Hurricanes buy him out. We knew that the Hurricanes weren't going to keep him. And, I mean, I know the answer. It was the salary cap. And I strongly believe, and I think you guys would agree, one of the reasons Kevin LeBanc signed that one-year, $1 million deal was so that the Sharks would have some room to sign Jumbo Joe and to sign Patrick Marlowe.
And the NHL says salary cap circumvention is no longer a problem, so you might as well just sign guys to contracts that don't matter.
You mean when Kevin LeBanc signs a new deal in December?
Well, no, January 1st. January 1st, when he's first eligible, signs that, here's an eight-year, $56 million deal for you, Kevin. There was no circumvention at all right now. That still bothers me to no end. I mean, the NHL has rules, and then they just don't have rules.
They're definitely looking the other way in regards to that one.
There's no question about that. But nice for Marlowe. I mean, get a good return. I mean, to the lineup, gets those two goals in that game. I think it was against the Blackhawks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no reason why he shouldn't still be playing. I mean, and I hate, you know, when people say, well, he's old. Well, I mean, what did he have, 40 points or something for the Leafs last year? So it's not like, I mean, he's still a productive player. Same thing goes for Justin Williams. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all, Dave, if Justin Williams decides at some point during the season that he wants to come back, because you know that Rod Brind'Amour, and Don Waddell, I mean, they'll gladly take Justin Williams back. You know,
might be 65-0 at that point.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's funny. You know, Bob McKenzie was talking about, you know, some of the other veterans that are still looking for jobs, and I mean, you have to think it's all salary cap related. Yeah, I mean, that's why a guy like probably Dion Phaneuf, even though Dion Phaneuf isn't the defenseman that he once was, he's a guy that's still looking for a contract, right? So I think Devontae Smith-Pelly was another player that
Brian Boyle apparently is apparently close to signing somewhere, so it's expected he's going to return to the NHL shortly.
But the Sharks need him. I mean, you mentioned he had two goals in his first game of the year, and the Sharks have had a pretty crappy start to the season. Mm-hmm. So I mean, the Sharks, obviously it's Stanley Cup or bust, and I'm serious. I mean, getting into the playoffs and, you know, getting out in the first or second round is not going to cut it when you have Marlowe and Thornton back. And I think that's going to be a big storyline here, because I think when you're talking about Thornton and Marlowe, you guys might disagree. I know you won't on Thornton, but I think you're talking about two Hall of Famers. So, I mean,
yeah. I Thornton for sure. I mean, I'd have to look into Marlowe's numbers a little bit closer, but probably has a pretty good argument. You know, when you
break down his longevity,
probably he's got a pretty good argument.
I would say Marlowe, the only thing that's missing is that Stanley Cup for both of them.
Right. No, and absolutely. But, you know, that's an interesting debate. We could probably look at that one a little bit. Well, obviously not anytime soon, because he's still playing in the NHL. We don't have to worry about him retiring.
Thornton is like Iggy. Thornton is a first ballot.
No question.
And Marlowe probably not.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Dave Manuk, cheer or jeer?
I'm cheering. I'm cheering all the people who came to last night's Moose game, because it was a snowpocalypse out there. And the fact that, you know,
Snowtober.
Whatever. But the point is that, honestly, like, it was brutal weather, brutal driving conditions. You know, I think they were probably about, they were expecting 6,000 or 7,000, maybe 7,000 for the game. They obviously didn't get that many, but for the intrepid fans who made their way out to Bell MTS Place yesterday, they deserve a kudos.
Ezra Ginsberg, cheer or jeer?
I'm going to cheer Bo Horvat being named captain of the Vancouver Canucks. I love the way that the Canucks organization rolled that out. And, you know, they had the former captains, you know, Henrik Sedin and, Trevor Linden, and you know, they had
Linden actually wasn't there, but he had a conflict. But there were other Marcus Naslund was
Marcus,
there.
Marcus Naslund was there, and Kirk McLean was part of the pregame ceremony. So I mean, Bo Horvat, you can't think of a better candidate to be captain. So kudos to him and the way the Canucks organization handled that.
And I'm gonna jeer the Philadelphia Flyers new rage room. I think it's just way too. I just think it's stupid. I mean, I don't understand the point of it. Don't you want people watching the game not breaking things in? in a room in the arena.
Is gritty allowed in there?
I don't know. The whole idea is stupid. I mean, I guess we're talking about it, so they got their success out of it that way, but I didn't like the Rage Room, and I think it's stupid.
I disagree. I think an Illegal Curve Rage Room would be great.
That is the studio. That's what we call the Rage Room. That's it for the Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, Stephen Wino. Big thank you to Matt Wenzel. Big thank you to Jimmy Greenfield. And a big thank you to Mike McIntyre. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN Radio 1290, and of course on our website. Big thank you to all of our sponsors. Without them, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show would not be possible. Big thanks to producer Sean Osorio, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.